more people come on. Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Elevating the Sparks. Nice to learn with you this evening. Always a pleasure. I do want to make one public service announcement, which is to say that tentatively there is a class scheduled for next Monday night. And that will depend on a few factors. It may not happen. I may not be available. Shah Tova, my wife and I are expecting very soon. So Meretz Hashem, everything will be good. But if I am not available for that reason, then you will be notified, please God. But tonight, I do want to, tonight I do want to talk about a very important thinker. We're going to go a little further in history to the beginning of the 19th century. We've been talking about the very first Hasidic masters. But tonight, I want to talk about a very important Hasidic thinker. And that is Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. Has anyone heard of Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin? Albert here, my friend here in the audience, says yes. Anyone else? Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin recently really has become a very popular thinker. His work has been consumed much more commonly in today's day and age for various reasons. But I'll talk for a few moments about his life. I'm not going to do his biography justice right now. It's quite a fascinating life. Like the other, many of the other Hasidic masters we've learned about, it is not a simple life. He did not lead a simple life. So Rav Tzadok HaKohen was born, I believe, in 1823 in Lublin, which is a part of Poland. He was not born into a Hasidic family. In fact, he was born into a Misnagdish family. And Rav Tzadok HaKohen was an Eloi, a genius, a prodigy. I got this information from Dr. Yaakov Elman. He writes in one of his articles on Rav Tzadok HaKohen that tradition has it, he began learning Gemara at the age of 3. He began learning Gemara at the age of 3, and he had mastered it by the age of 8. So that's pretty good. So he was an absolute Eloi, a genius beyond geniuses. I don't know exactly if the ages are accurate, but what I do know is from looking at his work, he quotes from everything, all areas of Torah. So he was a brilliant person. At a very young age, he got married and it did not work out well. And he sought a divorce from his wife. Jewish law now has it that one cannot divorce a woman against her will, and she did not want to divorce from him. And in order to be able to divorce Rav Tzadok HaKohen, divorce his wife, Rav Tzadok HaKohen sought out what is called a heter mei rabbanim, which is a rule, an interesting rule in halacha, not to discuss now, but there is a rule if you get the consent of 100 different rabbis, then it is possible to divorce a woman against her will. So he went traveling throughout Europe to visit all these rabbis to get this dispensation. And over the course of that journey, he became familiar with different Hasidic teachings. He became a student of the Mei HaShiloah, the Ishbitzer Rebbe, and he became a Hasid. And ultimately, he continued on this path, and he became a Rebbe in his own right as time went by. So this is a person who grew up in the Lithuanian School of Learning and ultimately became a Hasidic grandmaster. It's a lot more to say about Rav Tzadok. He is known a lot for his work on the history of halacha. He was a very revolutionary thinker in terms of his ideas of how halacha developed all the way from the time of the Tanakh through the time of the prophets until the time of Chazal. And he has some really interesting ideas and revolutionary ideas about how that happened. But I don't want to focus on that now. What I do want to do is delve into one of his teachings on the idea of Rosh Hashanah. So Rav Tzadok HaKohen wrote a number of works. One of them is called Pri Tzadik. The works are really interesting. He wrote some works that are specifically focused on Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law and the development of tradition, such as Rasisei Laila. He wrote works about dreams. Divrei Halomot are all about his ideas on dreams and their interpretations. And the Gemaras, there are Gemarot about how to interpret dreams and his take on them. He wrote a work about angels. It's called Sichat Malachei Ashareis. He also wrote a short manuscript on demons, on Shadim, which is also a topic treated in the Gemara. So yeah, he's really a voluminous writer. He wrote a ton. And one of the works he wrote was Preet Tzadik. Preet Tzadik is a series of discourses on the weekly Torah portion and also on the holidays. And what we're going to do now is try to study one of those works together or some of it. And let me just give you the following introduction. It is not an easy work. It is not an easy work. The writing is difficult, and he's quoting things left and right and sort of weaving them all together. So we're gonna have to dig in and try to, as you say, need help cup and try to dig at this together and understand what we can. So what I've done for you is in the source sheet, and again, I'll put the link in the chat, and I apologize for not translating the first part. I gave it little subtitles at the top, but it's very hard to translate all of that. But what I did for you is I had the actual text of the essay we're going to read together. And at the end of it, I have a number of sources which Tzedek HaKohen quotes. And I'd actually like to start by looking at the first source. So if you look after in the second page of the source sheet, after my paragraph called Torah and Chesed, I have a pasuk from Nehemiah. That's about Rosh Hashanah. It writes, and it's in Nehemiah chapter 8. If you know the story of Nehemiah, describes the return of the Jews to Eretz Yisrael after the Babylonian exile into Yerushalayim and the rebuilding of the temple. And as part of that, the Torah, the Navi, or Ksuvim, really, writes about the following. It writes about how they... Ezra Sofer read the Torah to the Jewish people, and they were very upset, and they were saddened by the reading of the Torah. And Ezra and Nehemiah tell them now not to be upset. And this is our first source here. Let's just read it briefly together. But Yomer Lahem, he said to them, L'chu echlu mashmanim u'shesu mamtakim. He says to them, don't be sad. Go, eat choice foods, drink sweet drinks, v'shilchu manot la'ein nachan la, and send food to those who do not have it. Ki kadosh hayom adoninu, today is holy to our master, v'al teyatzevu, don't be sad, ki chedvat Hashem hi ma'uschem, for your rejoicing in the Lord is the source of your strength. So here's the kicker, okay? Chazal understand that when it says ki kadosh hayom adoninu, don't be sad, rejoice, eat, be festive, because today is holy to our master. It's referring to a specific day. It's referring to Rosh Hashanah. Because I'll understand that what Ezra and Nehemiah were telling the people is, don't be sad, don't be upset, don't be distressed, eat, drink, rejoice, because today is holy, it's Rosh Hashanah. Now, what's the problem with that? What's the problem with that statement? What's the problem with Nehemiah and Ezra telling the people to rejoice and to eat and be festive because it's Rosh Hashanah? Any ideas? Hear me out for a second. When you think of Rosh Hashanah, what emotions do you usually associate with it? You're all on mute, so I can't hear you. Albert, go for it. If you were to pick a holiday in which you would say to people, don't be sad, eat, drink, be merry, it wouldn't be Rosh Hashanah, would it? Maybe it'd be Purim, Sukkot. In fact, if there was a holiday to be a little bit upset, it might be Rosh Hashanah. It's a scary day. It's Yom HaDin. It's a day of judgment. Furthermore, Rav Tzedek's going to point out, indeed, there are those authorities that hold that you're allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah. That is opinion in halacha. And it is not a day of eating and drinking and being merry. Not like Sukkot or other holidays. So it's quite strange that to explain to the people why it is that they should not be upset or sad and that they should rejoice, Nehemiah tells them, Kadosh Hayom L'Adoneinu. This day is holy to our master. Why is that a good explanation as to why they should eat and drink and be merry? It's Rosh Hashanah. Maybe he should be telling them it's Rosh Hashanah, the day is holy, so continue fasting or do tshuva. It's a very strange thing. Now this, I'll say parenthetically, is consistent with the opinion of Rav Tzadok, where he, at this point, Abayit Sheni thinks that all the halachot of Rosh Hashanah are already really applicable. So the fact that in halacha we find shitos that say that you can fast from Rosh Hashanah bothers us when we read this pasuk in Nehemiah. That's one question I want to focus on. Rav Tzadok takes it a little bit further in source number two. Source number two is a very difficult source. It's a Gemara in Erev. Gemara in Erev. Here's what it says. It says, Tana Rabbanan, the rabbi's Torah, source two. Or you could look at the English translation. For 2.5 years, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue. So some said it would have been better for a man, for humanity, not to have been created than to have been created. That being created ultimately is worse for humanity. Better to have not been created. The fear of sin is so strong. We're so likely to just mess everything up. Better that we would have not been created. That's one opinion. It would have been more pleasant or preferable for a person that he should be created. It's good that we were created. Or it's Noah. Nimnu the Gamru. They got together and decided. It is better, preferable for a man to not have been created than to have been created. You know what? Push comes to shove. For our sake, how would it have been better had God not created us? Achshav shenivra, nu, lemaisa, Hashem did create us, we're all here. Yifash feish shemasav, you should investigate your actions. Okay, now there's a lot to say about that Gemara. Quite difficult. It's quite a conversation starter. The Gemara is telling us, you know what? Maybe God would have been better off not creating us, at least for our sake. But here's the thing. The day of Rosh Hashanah, one of the many things that we commemorate on Rosh Hashanah is that, according to our sages, we say it in Tefillah, as Rav Tzadok will quote from, it is the day in which man was created. It's Hayom Harat Olam, and as we understand it, it is the day of the creation of humanity. Now, if that is so, and the Gemara is telling us, that Noah Lola Adam Shalom Nivra, it would have been preferable for man to not have been created, then this accentuates the question on Nehemiah. Nehemiah is telling them, Kadosh Hayom Adonainu, today is Rosh Hashanah. Don't be upset. But if Rosh Hashanah is the day of the creation of man, and the Gemara is telling us, Noah Lola Adam Shalom Nivra, Yotam Yishanivra, why is the day of Rosh Hashanah a reason to rejoice? We should be upset on Rosh Hashanah. It should be a day where we're not particularly happy and festive. Would have been better. We're so fearful of sin. Would have been better that we would not have been created. So these are the questions that Tzadok sets off to answer. In doing so, I think he introduces a lot of really fundamental, deep ideas that I hope resonate with you and that hopefully will reverberate in your mind as we prepare for Rosh Hashanah. So here we go. Again, I'm going to read most of this in Hebrew. I'll try not to read everything. But now we're going to turn back to the first page where it starts, Joy on the day of creation. That's the question. So he quotes the pasuk in Nehemiah. L'chu echu mashmanim mishisumam takim. V'shulchu manot zeinach l'okinosh yom adoneinu. Right, it's the pasuk. Nehemiah tells him to rejoice because it's Rosh Hashanah. V'zen nemar yom tosh Rosh Hashanah. V'yesh lahadeh. We have to understand, because it was a holy day to God. Yes, because it's a holy day, therefore you have to eat choice foods. Well, that's a strange association. Hello, Gemara. Behold, in the Gemara,
It says,
"Haplukta de Blazer of Yochanan, Chetzel Hashem Ukul Hashem, Nishan Emra Lashem Lukacha, Lashan Hashem Hashem Lachem." Question one. There's a Gemara, and he quotes so many here. There's a Gemara that has an argument. What is the right way to spend Yom Tov? One opinion says that you should spend the day either eating or learning. One opinion is you should split your day. What do we say? How do you spend Yom Tov? Chetzio Lashem, Chetzio Lachem. Half is for you, half is for God. What do you do on a Yom Tov during the half that is for God? Daven and learn. What do you do on the half that is for you? Eat. So if the day of Rosh Hashanah is holy to God, why is Nehemiah saying that you should eat? If it's holy to God, the indication is from the Gemara that if it's holy to God, you should not eat. We should spend the day praying. That's one aspect of this question. The Gam b'Gemara, Matzinu Sha'amar Lazar Tamidav, B'chu Echlu Mashmanim, B'hikshu Sha'am Mitzos, V'alor Rabbi Lazar, Sabar Kul Hashem. Right? We find this in Tosfot also. We quote from the Gemara. Rabbi Lazar told his Talmidim to eat and drink on Yom Tov. Tosfot is bothered by this. Why is Rabbi Lazar telling this to his Talmidim? He thinks you could spend the entire day, La Hashem, which means to not eat. So that's the question. Good. And then he adds another question. Avatzari Piyar, in your Yom Tov Shal Rosh Hashanah, Zman Briya to Adam L'Simcha. Why would it be that the day of Rosh Hashanah is a day of whole happiness if it is also the time of the creation of man? Haloamar Chazal Noach Lo Shalom Nivra Mishanivra. Chazal say it would have been better to not have been created. Ramis before proposed Shayesha Misanim Rosh Hashanah. There are those who fast on Rosh Hashanah. Ve mitzvah lachov elisho. Stalka. There is no mitzvah to eat. Bitzar, Biar Mikra Hanah. Okay, that's the question. You get the question? Why is Nehemiah telling them to be festive, to have a feast, to eat and drink on Rosh Hashanah, if we know so much about Rosh Hashanah that indicates that that is not necessary behavior? Let's try taking this answer. Here we go. Here we go. This is going to be a roller coaster ride. I know it's late, so I'll try to move quickly here. Stay with me. Amna. Here's the answer. Ritzadok is going to say that it all goes back to the Eitz Hadas. The Chet Eitz Hadas. That is because, thinking about this question, what could it possibly mean? Was it really not preferable for Hashem to create man? Is that so? Was it always going to be that way? Was it always going to be that way that there's this pessimism about the creation of humanity? There is this darkness associated with human behavior, with our Yetzer Hara. Or was there an alternative possibility? Rav Tzadok HaKohen is going to suggest that there was an alternative possibility, and it all changed during the very first sin. That is the sin of eating from a tree of knowledge. And then on the day in which we commemorate the creation of man, we also have an opportunity to correct the sin of the Eitz Hadat. Take a look here. He says, "Amna ma'inyon ki yadua shebachal Rosh Hashanah nit'orer ha'inyon shel reshit habriya." Every Rosh Hashanah, there is a reawakened force of creation, of the beginning of creation. This is an important point. I think it's worth taking just a moment to reflect on this in terms of Rav Tzadok and the Chassidus generally. It's a point we made before. I'm going to make it again. Now, the Hasidic perspective on the world, the Jewish mystical perspective on the world, is that the world that we see, touch, and feel, that is tangible, is not what you might call the most important world. The Hasidic perspective on our world is that it is an outer shell. The physical world is an outer shell of the far more important interior spiritual world that is hidden from us. Part of our mission is through our actions, through our mitzvot, through our learning Torah, through our keeping the Torah mitzvot, is to unlock access to that spiritual world. So what Tzadok says here, Rosh Hashanah, we might think on a surface level, Rosh Hashanah is commemorating. It is something that we remember. Today, we remember the creation of the world. Nothing's happening right now. What happens at Rosh Hashanah? Nothing particular, but what happens is we go to shul and we think about certain things. That is not the Hasidic approach. What Tzadok's approach to Rosh Hashanah is that there is a spiritual force that we can access on Rosh Hashanah that relates to the beginning of creation. That the Jewish calendar is cyclical, and that in each of the holidays, it's not just commemorating what happened in the past, but there is a spiritual force that caused each of those holidays that is accessible in the present. And so every year on Rosh Hashanah, this spiritual force of Reshit HaBriah, the beginning of creation, once again is reawakened. And our job is to access that spiritual force. So that's what he, Kemosha Omrim, so continuing this line, that on the first, on Rosh Hashanah, Nitzora Inyon Sol Reshit HaBriah, Kemosha Omrim, Hayom Harat Olam, as it says, today is the birth of the world. Va'az ne'emar, v'halokim asa et ha'adam yeshar. God made man straight. This is a pasuk you can find after the piece of Tzadok in source number 3 at the third page. This is a pasuk from Kohelet. It says, Lech levad re'ezem atzati, see that I have found this. Asher asa elokim et ha'adam yeshar. God made man straight, but humanity sought and pursued many different calculations. That is to say, says Tzadok, that we were created with the opportunity to be totally holy. And at Chet Eitz Hadat, everything was corrupted. Everything was twisted. And he explains how. He says, V'achar zeh, after God created man straight, hayah kilko betavat achila, there was a ruining that happened and caused us to have tavat achila, the temptation to eat, the temptation to ingest physicality. Ayedei achilat eitz hadaat tov v'ra, through eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That there is something that happened there. A fundamental change happened in the makeup of humans. The Isa B'tikunim, and now he's quoting the Tikkuni Zohar. Again, he quotes him all over. Quotes something interesting. There are about, there's an argument here. I'll paraphrase it briefly. There's an argument here about what the Eitz Hadas was. Let's take a step outside for a second. There's an argument in Chazal. What sort of fruit the Eitz Hadas was? Some say wheat grew on this tree. Some say it was the vine. Grapes grew on the tree. Some say it was figs. And in Tikkuni Zohar, it says it's all true. They're all right. So what does that mean? Ratzaka Cohen says that there were two options. There were two options at the beginning of creation. The Eitz Hadaat Tovara and the Eitz HaChayim. Each of those trees would have impacted how we ate all the other fruits of the tree. Meaning to say, he says this. In fact, skip, if you look at the paragraph where I have the sin of eating from the tree of knowledge, you can skip down to that fourth line where it says the fourth word, it says ki, and there is a little acronym, ayin hei dalet. He says, ki eitz hadas, ve'eitz hachayim hayu be'emtza gan. The tree of knowledge and the tree of life were in the middle of the garden. V'kol atzei hagan sevivan, all the trees of the garden surrounded them. V'hem hayenata matam shel kol atzei hagan. God included in those trees the tastes of all the other trees of the garden. Kulan. V'mhayetoim mitchila be'etz hachayim. If Adam had at first eaten from the etz hachayim, from the tree of life, he would have tasted in everything he ate eats the taste of the Eitz HaChaim, of life, of true life. Meaning to say, if he would have eaten from the Eitz HaChaim, eating, physicality, would not have been a purely physical experience. If Adam had eaten from the Eitz HaChaim first, then all physicality would have been clearly seen as a means for spirituality. We would have tasted the taste of Eitz HaChaim, of true life, in everything. But it's not what happened. When Adam and Eve ate instead from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that means to say as follows. Something critical happened when Adam ate from the Eitz HaDaat. All of our eating was affected. All physicality was affected. From then on, because the Eitz HaDaat contained within it all the tastes of the other trees of the garden, it means to say that when Adam ate from the Eitz HaDaat, he now had a totally physical temptation of eating. It introduced into eating the physical temptation. And that is what brings the downside of humanity. That physical temptation that became part of our physical experience and everything that we do once Adam and Eve ate from the Eitz HaDaat. So that is to say, to summarize, it is not that when Hashem created Adam HaRishon, it was bad. It was Noach Lo Shlo Nivra. It's that due to this corrupting of the human character, due to this Chet Eitz HaDaat, our experience became one in which was characterized by temptation for physicality. And that is what changes our human experience to be one marked by sin and by failure. And that's what happens the day that Hashem creates Adam HaRishon. So how does that relate to Rosh Hashanah? How does that relate to Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah Kohen does something really creative. He noted that there are two approaches to Rosh Hashanah. Two approaches. One is to fast. To fast on Rosh Hashanah. Not to eat. To refrain from eating. That is one opinion in the postgame. And that is one approach. One approach to being mitaken. To repairing the sin of the Eitz HaDaat Tovara. Ratzalik HaKohen is going to argue that one of our goals on Rosh Hashanah is to be mitaken, to repair, to atone for the original sin of humanity, of eating from the Eitz HaDaat. And these two opinions of whether to eat or to fast in Rosh Hashanah are two different approaches to how to repair that sin. And this so far also relates to this. How so? I'll read a little bit here. For those, I just tried again to put the link to the source sheet in the chat. We're now starting from the paragraph, which is headed, Repairing the Sin Through Fasting. It'll be Yom Rosh Hashanah, on the day of Rosh Hashanah. Some hold, it's permissible to fast. Hainu Mithnesha Ba'oto Yom, on that day. There is an awakening, an ability to repair and fix that first defect, that first sin which brought about the temptation to eat. One approach, how are we mitaking the sin which brought about the temptation? By refraining from eating. The sin was eating from the Eitz HaDaat, which colored all the way that anything we eat. So we are mitaking that sin by refraining from eating, according to one approach. Fasting is a way of being restricted, of containing the Yetzer Hara, putting it back in its place. Liota Yetzer Hara nichna b'leva adam, that the evil inclination should become subservient in the human heart. Through doing this, a person can repair that first defect. The gam mitzvot shofar shebarash hashana hu al esoros hashofar shel ha'asim lavo. The mitzvah of the shofar. The mitzvah of the shofar, one idea is, it is an awakening to the power of the shofar at the end of days. What does that mean? Ritzito quotes an interesting midrash. You can take a look at the midrash, actually. Fascinating midrash in source number 4. You flip to, again, to the last page of the source sheet. In source number 4, and I have a brief English translation here, is the Psik de Rabbati, an early midrash, that writes as follows. Interesting question. Yilandinu Rabinu, shofar shenike vustamo, mahi shekash lekob. Question is, I have a shofar, that there's a hole in the shofar, a defect, and I fix the defect. I plug up the hole in the shofar. Is such a shofar usable for Rosh Hashanah? Lach a question. He says, kach shana rabosenu, in the akivu, hatakia pastul, the magu kasher, if it impacts, if this hole in the shofar affects the way that the sound of the shofar sounds, then it invalidates the horn. And if not, it's okay. Here's the kicker why. My tongue, diksiv, and now I see it's a shemot, diksiv, Hashem Elokim b'shofar yitzaka. In Shezin Zechariah, that Hashem, at the end of days, is going to blow the shofar. Ma shofaro shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu shalim. Just as God's shofar needs to be complete and perfect, Av shofar shel Rosh Hashanah yehi shalim. Our shofar on Rosh Hashanah mirrors God's shofar in that it is complete. In what sense? And why is the completion so necessary? Shebarosh Hashanah he nigalim imalach hamavet. On Rosh Hashanah, we are redeemed from the angel of death. The shofar in some way relates to this redemption from the angel of death. How is that so? What is the connection between the shofar and the angel of death? Rav Tzadok argues as follows. And I'm going to go outside a little bit for a second. Rosh Hashanah is the day of the creation of man. The creation of man was forever affected, impacted, harmed, corrupted by the sin of the Eitz Hadaat. That is what caused us to die. God says, now that you've eaten from the Eitz Hadaat, I cannot let Adam live. He's going to have to die. So it's that sin which makes us susceptible to the angel of death. Rav Tzadok is telling us on Rosh Hashanah, we had the opportunity to repair that sin, to free ourselves from the angel of death, to repair that defect. And so on Rosh Hashanah, the shofar, which is the implement we use as our mitzvah, is reminiscent, representative of God's shofar at the end of days that will ultimately free us from the angel of death. So here's what he writes here. Let's pick it up. Let's pick it up from the beginning of the paragraph here for a second. You take a look here at the third line under repairing the sin through fasting. There's a vav reish lam. It says the vav reish lam ratzalomar to us yivor yitzhar me'ol. At the end of days, when God blows his shofar, the yitzhar hara will be eradicated from the world. V'zayidei shofar hagadol, that will be for the ultimate shofar. K'mo shenemar v'haya b'yom mahu yitzaka b'shofar gadol. V'vahu ha'ovdin be'aretz ha'shor v'anidachon be'aretz mitzrayim. It's the last source in your opinions. We can just quote it outside for now. He's just talking about this. It says at the end of days, God will blow the blade shofar, and those who are lost will return and come from the land of Assyria, and the wanderers will return from Egypt. What does that mean? That means to say this original defect will be totally repaired at the end of days. It's not, again, the Hasidic perspective is the physical reality is always connected to a deeper spiritual reality. So the ingathering of the exiles through the blowing of the shofar at the end of days is not just a physical ingathering of the exiles. But it's deeper. It's even those who are subsumed among the nations of the world, even those Jews who have assimilated, who have lost the path, who are nidachim, who are wandering, who are lost in foreign lands. Yitzor behem pinimius nekuda shebekdusha. The internal holiness in all of them, the spark of holiness within them will be awakened. Lachzor l'shorsham, to return to their roots. Kibrishit habriya. At the end of days, there will be an internal redemption. Even those Jews who are lost and are wandering will be gathered, will be called in by the shofar, that God will awaken the unique spark of holiness within each of them and cause them to do tshuva. Look at the Isi Birushalmi, quotes Yerushalmi here. You don't need to read it inside. But that's what's going to happen at the end of days. And therefore, he says something interesting. We know that in Halacha, I'll say this part outside, we know that in Halacha, you have to do three different blows halachically. You need to do three truas. And each of those truas needs to be preceded and followed by tekiya. So that's what we require in Halacha. Tekiya, shirua, tekiya. Right? We know this. And of course, in Halacha, we don't really know what a trua is. Is a trua the nine sets of short blasts? Is it the three medium-sized blasts? Is it the combination of the shvarim and the trua? So then we have to do all of them, and each of them three times, followed with a tekiya and a tekiya, then we get it 100 times. But fundamentally, the character of blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah is tekiya, trua, tekiya. What's the meaning of that? Why tekiya, trua, tekiya? Brilliant idea of tzaddok. What is a tekiya? A tekiya is what we call a pshuta. It's a kol pshuta. What's pshuta mean? Simple. It's a simple blow. Tekiya, and it's a straight blow. A simple blow of the shofar. What's a trua? Trua is broken. It's broken. It's right? It's a bunch of broken blows followed by a tekiya. Says Rav Tzadok HaKohen, incredible idea, that this actually is representative of the history of humanity in the past, present, and future. Man began as a tikkia, a simple blow. At the beginning of creation, humans were simple. We were not corrupted by the Eitz Hadas, by the Tavas Achila, by physical temptation. God made us yashar. He made us straight. Throughout the majority of human history, throughout our long exile, is the period of trua, of brokenness, of broken sound, of complication, of failure, and rising again, and more failure. And that's the shvarim. That represents the trajectory. Most of human history is a period of trua. That's the main thing that we're blowing on Rosh Hashanah. And then the last thing that we blow is the tekiya. And what does that represent? That's the shofar of the end of days. That's when God will once again vanquish the angel of death, fully repair the sin of the chidei tzadas, and reawaken the holy spark within all of us. It's tekiya, trua, tekiya, because that is what we're thinking about in Rosh Hashanah. How to repair this defect at the beginning of time. How to get back to that shofar at the end of days, the final tekiya. Based on this, you can turn the page a bit. I'll say this outside as well for the sake of time, since I know it's late. There's a brilliant idea here. There, I'll say it briefly. It's a bit subtle, but I'll say it briefly. In our Shmona Esrei on Musaf, on Rosh Hashanah, we have a long middle part of the Amidah made up of Malkuyot, Zichronot, and Shofar. You know this. This is the unique part of davening in Rosh Hashanah. It's why Musa takes so long. It's why it's the longest Shmona Esrei of the year. Those three sections of Shmona Esrei are made up of each of them, Malchiot, Zechronot, and Shofrot, kingship, remembrance, and the blow of the shofar, each contain within them 10 different psukim, which reference those themes. And each of those 10 psukim contain at least 3 psukim from Torah, 3 psukim from Nevi'im, 3 psukim from Ksuvim. Okay? Now, here is what's interesting. What would you think the order should be? You have 10 psukim reflecting each of these themes. You're going to have some from Torah, some from Nevi'im, and some from Ksuvim. The intuitive order would be you start with the psukim from Torah, you follow with the psukim from the Nevi'im, and you end with the psukim from Ksuvim. That would be the intuitive order. Tanah, Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. That's not how it goes for Shofarot. Shofarot, the last section in the Shmona Esrei, switches the order. We say the psukei Ksuvim before the psukei HaNevi'im. That's interesting. Why do we do that? Why do we say the psukim of Tuvim first? Rav Sadok argues is because of this idea of Tekiah, Trua, Tekiah, and the content. He argues as follows. The psukim in the Torah refer to the shofar of Matan Torah. Matan Torah, we had a tikkun for the kilkul. There, Chazal tell us that had we not committed Cheta Egel, we would have lived forever. We would have repaired the sin of the Eitz Hadad. So that was the time of that Tekiah, that original simplicity. The Psukim in Ketuvim talk about the Tekiah Shofar that we do when we blow the Shofar. Our blowing now of the Shofar. That's the middle period where it's not so simple. Where we have a struggle with the Yetzer Hara. And the Psukim and Nevi'im refer to the Shofar of La'atid Lavam, the Shofar when Mashiach comes. So it's again, Tekiah, Trua, Tekiah. Simplicity, brokenness, and simplicity. We say the Psukim in that order to reflect this human history. All because of this Eitz Hadat, this original sin, and our attempt to repair it. So now he returns. Just a few more points here. V'nashrol inyaninu. You can look at the last page of, second page of my handout. Underword says, repairing the sin through, through eating Torah. I'll get to that in a second. He says, v'nashrol inyaninu. So inyan atanas or Rosh Hashanah utikun b'chinas is kafia. Back to the idea. What we're doing in Rosh Hashanah is trying to repair the sin of the Eitz Hadat. One method of doing that is through fasting. That is the basis for the opinion that allows fasting on Rosh Hashanah. You see the brilliance here, how he's living together all these different sources from Kabbalah, from Medrash, from Gemara, from the Rishonim, from Halacha, from Tanakh, and using it to build this beautiful edifice of the of what it means to keep Rosh Hashanah appropriately. So the opinion in Halacha, which allows for fasting on Rosh Hashanah, is reflective of this methodology of repairing the Chet Eitz Hadat. However, he says there's something deeper than that. It's a deeper way to repair the Chet Eitz Hadat. The Yesh O Tikkun B'Madrega Yoter Gedola. There's another way of repairing it, which is an even greater level. Shinyu Inyan B'Chinas Et Hapcha Mirura Limatika. Which is the idea of not restriction, but transforming the bitter to the sweet. Through eating in holiness. You took an abgam, instead of saying, we were corrupted, we therefore had the temptation of eating, and we repair that by not eating. The other way to repair the sin is to eat with holiness and to, in a sense, eat through the Eitz HaChayim. To eat in a way which is colored by the tree of life, the tree we were meant to partake of to begin with. Al Pi HaTorah HaKdoshah, Jehu Eitz Chaim, through the Torah. Now, I'm not sure what he means here, but Ritzalak is going to argue here that the eating referred to a Nehemiah. The eating referred to when Nehemiah says to the people, don't be sad on Rosh Hashanah. Don't be mournful. Kadosh Hayom Adoneinu. Today is a day of holiness. Means that the eating that he intends us to do on Rosh Hashanah is a achila of kedusha, an eating of sanctity through the Eitz Chaim, through the Torah. I will admit, I'm not sure if he means that it's just a remnant to learning Torah, or he means that if we appropriately learn Torah, we can imbue the eating that we do on Rosh Hashanah with Kedusha. And a better way to be mitakin, a holier way, if you can do it, to be mitakin the Sinei Tzedat, is not to fast, but to imbue your eating itself with Kedusha. And that's the greatest way of singing. And that's the Ichlu Mashmanim refers to this eating through the Torah, which is the Eitz Chaim. And there are many places he quotes through Tanakh in which Torah is symbolized by eating. L'chu b'lachmi, that our food, our spiritual sustenance is the Torah. And through our eating on Rosh Hashanah, through our eating of the Eitz Chaim, through this holy eating, we can be metak in the Chedet Hadas. I'll mention something else briefly, just for a moment. There are strange things we do on Rosh Hashanah. You're familiar with them. What do we do on the night of Rosh Hashanah? We eat all these funny things, right? There's all these simonim. You know, shayirbik yisikli atenu, we eat carrots, we eat all this different stuff. The head, shaniya larosh, below the zana, right? All these kind of tricky, cute, clever little allegories we ascribe to the different names of the foods that we eat based on the Gemara, which says Simana Milta. So you could look at this as just a cute sort of custom. You know, it's a nice thing, and the kids get into it. It's beautiful. And Tzadok HaKohen looks in a much deeper way. He connects it to this idea. If what we're doing in Rosh Hashanah is being mitaking for the Chedetz Hadas, which was an eating of impurity, an eating which corrupted our character, that on Rosh Hashanah, we can fix that same by an eating which is going to set us up for a Shana Tova Mitzuka, for a year of sweetness, to taste the sweetness of spirituality. We're repairing that original sin through that eating. That's in a previous piece in the Preet Sadik. So that's the idea of eating. So the eating Nehemiah tells them to do when he tells them to be happy, it's one and the same. The happiness is through this spiritual eating, this achila of the Torah, of the Eitz Chaim, which atones for that original pigam, that original defect, the eating of the Eitz Hadas. And that is the ultimate simcha, is we can celebrate with God. And he continues to say, V'achar zeh v'shilchu mano le'ein nachana. It says afterwards, send food to those who don't have it. The lo matzanu mitzvah kazu b'shum yanto. We don't find this, except for Purim. Mishloach manot in Rosh Hashanah, what's the idea? Achu remes chazal, kol mishu osek b'torah, ugemilas chasadim, yitro masor b'yado. The antidote, our chachamim tell us, to fighting the Yetzer Hara, which we gained at the very beginning of time, is through the combination of Torah and Chesed. Learning Torah and acts of loving kindness. So Nehemiah is telling the Jewish people, it's not a simplistic go, eat, drink, be merry on Rosh Hashanah and celebrate. Because Kadosh Yom Adoneinu, it's much deeper than that. The Tzadok is suggesting that what he's saying to them is, this is our opportunity to repair the Pigam Eitz Hadas. This is our opportunity to tap into that power at the end of days, the final tekiah, the shofar gadol, in which that nekuda of kedusha, that spark of holiness within each of us will be awakening. This is the opportunity to overtake the Yetzer Hara, to conquer our evil inclination. How do we do that? We do that through the achila of the Eitz Chaim, the eating of the tree of life, through limud haTorah, and the impact it has on us, and through gemilas chasadim, through acts of loving kindness, shilchu manot le'enachon, And if we do that, and he says at the end here, therefore, for the first half of the day they learned, the second half of the day they ate and gave food to those who were in need. We do that. If we do that, then we can be mitaken the Yetzer Hara. We can overcome it. And that is a reason to celebrate on Rosh Hashanah. So on Rosh Hashanah, Tzadok HaKohen is telling us, we have the opportunity on Rosh Hashanah in which the forces of the beginning of creation are once again reawakened. And we have the opportunity to fix the chet, Eitz Hadas. If we do that right, with the appropriate approach, with the eating of the Eitz HaChaim of Torah, and the acts of loving kindness, then we can truly be happy with God. God can rejoice in that. And so that is part of our mission on Rosh Hashanah. It's repairing the original sin of Chet Eitz Hadas. It's making right what was corrupted so long ago. Tapping into that potential latent within each human and hopefully setting us up on the path, the final shofar gadol of Rosh Hashanah in La'asid, in which we will finally conquer the angel of death. So I wish you, as we approach Rosh Hashanah, a sweet, happy new year, the opportunity to conquer all the urges within us, to fix all that negativity, all the dark places within our souls, and to fill it with the Eitz HaChaim of Torah and the feasting of Chesed. In that merit, we should have a Shana Tova Mitzuka and a year of health and happiness. I hope you can appreciate the grandeur of Rav Tzadok's Torah, how he takes from so many different sources. I know it's not easy and it's heavy stuff. So many different sources, Halacha and Gemara and Midrash and Kabbalah and Zohar, and he weaves it all together into this beautiful idea. That was his genius, but I think it also speaks to the incredible unity of Torah and how deep it is and how it can impact our thinking and our lives. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to learn with you. And we'll see. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Rabbi Shkoach.